are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Friday, October the 16th. And Fridays with Brian back again. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in Detroit City covering sports gambling for PlayMichigan.com, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well.
And I'm Brother Brian, and I once saw Tayshaun Prince and Swin Cash on what could have been a date.
Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts that your car will ever need at RockAuto.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast. Today we're going to talk about a little bit of legacy. We have to do it. We're a basketball podcast. We have to do the LeBron tapestry after he wins another title. Also going to talk Pistons draft picks. Brian's got some insight and thoughts on Cole Anthony and Aaron Nesmith after this week's presentations about those guys. We're also going to do a little round robin news of the day to close out the week here. Ty Lue, the new coach of the Los Angeles Clippers, and his right-hand man sounds like it's going to be a former Pistons legend. And Daryl Morey showing the door, or actually heads to the door himself for the Rockets organization. But give me a follow on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore for that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook, but as you know by now, joined by Brother Brian, as the NBA season is now complete, this is the first post-bubble edition of Fridays with Brian. Brian, thanks for joining us.
It's the off-season. It's the Detroit sports fan favorite time of year, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hope springs eternal this time of year. But speaking of sports, I just realized I'm reading some tweets about what's going on with the town hall, and no, I did not watch either of those, and about what's going on with the baseball playoffs, and I have not watched a pitch of the baseball playoffs. Do I have to like swim to the Canadian border and become a non-American now at this point? What's my problem?
Not watching baseball makes you more American than anything else you do, I believe. No, and I've watched very few. I literally just turned it on yesterday in the third inning and saw it was a 15-0 game already. I watched a couple innings today, and that's just because there isn't any basketball or anything else on or football tonight. So it's the first time I've checked in as well. I might, you know, go through the rest of the postseason here and check it out, just because there really isn't much going up against it when we don't have football here every day of the week. But yeah, I'm a little behind on it as well.
Yeah, I guess that's the sign of the times here. And maybe we're a little sportsed out from all that bubble stuff. But a little bubble reaction before we get into LeBron and the Lakers. I've kind of said this all along, but do you have objections? I mean, is there an asterisk that now that we've gone through this whole thing? There was so much asterisk talk before this whole thing started. Do we need to put a qualifier on one of these titles now that Lakers want to run away with it?
I mean, it's different. So yes, I mean, maybe you want to identify it as different, but I don't necessarily subscribe to the, what seems to be the overwhelming thought that this was a much easier title for the Lakers to win than other teams have had in the past. Seems to be the fans' perspective anyway. Whenever I hear a player speak about it, they talk about how much tougher it was. And I think I'll err on the side that this, if anything, was a little bit tougher when you're kind of all you're, you know, consuming is basketball and you can't, you know, get away from it. So, you know, yeah, maybe it'll always sit in our minds as something slightly different, but I don't think that necessarily means it was easier either.
Yeah, I wonder what we'd be saying if the Miami Heat did beat the Lakers, though, because then you would have had the home court advantage that would have been the higher seed, the Lakers, or if there was a couple of upstart teams that would have made it to the NBA Finals or something like that. You take the home court advantage away. But I don't know, like you said, I think we can all identify with someone being away from their families, especially these guys who are multimillionaires who have been used to having things their way throughout certainly their professional lives, and to have it be as difficult as that situation could have been, albeit they're staying in nice places and they're playing basketball. So it's really not all that bad, but comparatively speaking, being told where you can go and what you can do can be tough for some of these guys, and really such a long time to be sitting in the nice hotel room, but still hotel room nonetheless. But let's talk about LeBron. He gets it done, title number 4. the legacy talk. Zach Lowe's got a big long piece about MJ versus LeBron, which is, I guess we have to do this, right? We have to do this talk about MJ versus LeBron. We've talked a little bit about this privately, but it's just like the peak MJ is still better than peak LeBron. But the fact that LeBron's peak has been so long is impressive in and of itself. Is there a way to call it like, hey, both these guys are just really damn good, and why do we have to argue about it so much, right?
Well, I mean, that's got to be the attitude going into these things. But people, you know, this is what sports is about. It's the conversations that it, you know, sparks between people. It's the arguments that people seem to feel very, very passionate about. And it's also sparked from the inside sometimes. And I harken back to the, you know, after they won the championship and LeBron, you know, getting his damn respect and all that. Mm-hmm. At worst, anybody with half a brain is calling you the second best basketball player of all time. I don't know how much more respect he's looking for or thinks he deserves, because as a basketball fan, there I can't give any more respect to LeBron James. And I think, you know, putting him in the conversation or having an argument whether he's the greatest of all time with Michael Jordan or not is about the most respect you can possibly give another athlete. So, you know, I don't know where he's coming from or if he's pointing at a couple of individual people in the media or not in the media or something that he's thinking about. But when he says stuff like that, it just kind of sparks this, you know, what more can you do? Yes, on that side of the argument, but also how much more respect as a fandom can we give him than, you know, being the, at worst, second best player in basketball history.
But I think we learned from watching The Last Dance, right, that Michael Jordan famously was looking for this kind of stuff. And maybe that's when you get to LeBron's level where you're clearly the best player of this generation and probably the generation before you, because now you've outlasted multi-generations, that you've got to find something, whatever it's going to be to fuel the fire. And if it's got to be Skip Bayless, if it's got to be whatever he's reading in his mentions or something that tells him that he's not Michael Jordan or that he ain't anybody or he's nothing, that you find those people, you amplify them in your own mind, and then you try to overcome that. I think that's what we do as podcasts. Guests as well. We try to find out the haters and put out great content every day to despite that. So we kind of relate to that, I think.
Well, there are a lot of haters, I've noticed, but no, I agree with that. I mean, these athletes are always looking for whatever motivation they can to get a leg up on the competition. So I'm sure that, you know, there is part of that, but you know, he's got to be smart enough to kind of separate, you know, the signal from the noise, as Nate Silver kind of coined. And you know, when he's, you know, on the national stage like he was after that championship and talking about not getting his respect. And it just, it falls on deaf ears of mine, because, again, I see nothing but most people giving him respect. Are they critical of things, and are they comparing him to somebody we've considered the greatest at their job in the history of jobs as being disrespectful? Well, and then him and I have a different definition of being disrespected.
Yeah, but the NBA world continues and moves on, and the Lakers, I've got to believe, will be going into next season as the odds-on favorites to win the title again, and we'll see. Well, LeBron's got left in the tank. Amazing how just athletic he looked in the playoffs there, just an unbelievable display by a guy at his age, drafted in 2003, right before a young Darko Milicic coming from Serbia. And talking about that, the 2020 version of the NBA draft coming up as we tape this 3 days and a month from now on November 18th. We're going to talk about Aaron Nesmith and Cole Anthony, some draft thoughts in general as well, trading down thoughts as well. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But hey, and you know that chain stores have different price tiers for the professional mechanics than the do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet for your ride. Whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand specifications and the prices that you prefer. The best of all, it's those prices. At RockAuto.com, they're always reliably low, and the same for the pros as the do-it-yourselfers. Why? Spend up to twice as much for the same parts. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts that your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, and Brother Brian is back with us. He's been doing the Almost Legends series for us. You can look ahead to some more of those coming up each week for the rest of the offseason. That's right. We just committed Brian to the rest of the offseason, so he has no choice but to continue working for us here for these next several months. But cancel your plans there. Aaron Nesmith and Cole Anthony were the draft profiles that we discussed this week, just the two of those guys coming off of the foreigners last week and then the six, eight guys the week before that. So is it, you know, a little bit of a common thread here, and guys that 1 year for in college for Cole Anthony, two for Aaron Nesmith at Vanderbilt. But, you know, what do you think about these guys that have spent a little bit of time in college, a little bit unproven in a lot of ways, but some things you like at the NBA level too?
Well, with Cole Anthony specifically, starting off with him, since that was the first one we did, I came into it not wanting to like Cole Anthony, and by the time I was done doing that profile, I thought more highly of him than I had previously thought. Some of the things that stuck out to me were his experience with the Nike EYBL, and at that level of competition, how he seemed to be the player that shined, you know, between his sophomore and junior year's defensive player of the year, and between his junior and senior year in high school, he was the league MVP in that league. And that seemed to be, you know, pre-college, the highest league that he competed in. He was, you know, regarded as one of the, if not the best player in those leagues. Once he got to college, he had some problems with, some injuries, and then, you know, the talent level at North Carolina wasn't what it usually was with him. And he was kind of the focal point of their offense. So, being the guy who always had the ball in his hand and was taking the most shots, a lot of teams were able to key in on him and know that if they stopped him, they had a chance to beat a lesser than usually talented North Carolina team. Nesmith was the one who we saw a huge improvement from his freshman to his sophomore season in his outside shooting. And, you know, that's certainly something that's going to step out, you know, be, you know, hopefully translate well to the NBA for him. He's a classic 3-and-D guy. Some of these 3-and-D guys with Sadiq Bey and Bolmaro, maybe a little bit in there, and now with Nesmith, I'm just seeing a lack of athleticism. And while the distance shooting is nice and his ability to guard multiple positions is also nice, just on the – he's just going to be out athletic. You know, there's got to be players that we're going to be coming to that are just more complete, more polished, and not just offer a skill that isn't necessarily easy to find in the NBA, but we have players on the Pistons roster right now that can kind of fill those roles right now. And I think the Pistons need kind of a more dynamic player. I'm still leaning towards, you know, getting that point guard situation figured out. I think there's a lot of them in this draft, Cole Anthony being one of them, that are pretty dynamic. And I think, you know, Nesmith would be somebody that, you know, if you trade down and you're able to get, you know, one or two, you know, another first round pick along with Nesmith would be a nice person to bring in as part of a bigger two or three person class. Cole Anthony, if you traded down a couple slots, he may be the best guard available, and that might not necessarily be a bad thing. He's one of the better pure scorers at his size in this draft.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up 3-and-D, because it is a buzzword from a couple years back that still sticks around, and everyone wants guys who can play defense, and everyone wants guys that can make 3-point shots. So it seems like that's an archetype that you'd really want, and there's nothing wrong with it, but you got to have the right guys around that to make it work, right? The Pistons don't have a lot of guys that can create any offense. Now, in theory, maybe you take a 3-and-D guy, and then you get that guy next year, maybe some sort of free agency situation, you trade for it going forward. But yeah, like you said, and I loved your Tony Snell comparison from the draft profile. And I also think about a guy like Langston Galloway, and Langston Galloway is not a great defensive player, and Tony Snell has never really proven to be a great defensive player, but both these guys are capable defensive players who have made 3-point shots at a very high percentage throughout most of their careers. And guess what? The Pistons have been no good with those guys on their roster. So to take a guy whose ceiling is 3-D, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And again, I know that I'm the guy who's sitting here saying there's nothing wrong with Halliburton, Hayes, or Onyeka Okongwu, and I do recognize that all those guys have ceilings. However, I think that those guys all have certain traits that can help winning basketball, and they can develop the weaknesses or maybe the neutral parts of their game to where they can become parts of great teams in the future. With a 3-D guy who doesn't have that maybe third skill that you're looking for or something else that jumps out the page to you, I just don't see how that helps a really bad Pistons team right now.
Right. It is a piece of the puzzle down the road potentially, but you're just not anywhere near that point right now where you're filling in those holes for the Pistons. And actually, I think it could work, you know, in the inverse, and you can kind of handcuff yourself in the future if you start plugging holes right now that other people who may be more dynamic could be if the opportunity arises to bring people like that on. Let's not forget, too, with both of these players, but Nesmith in particular, that 52% from deep in college came over a 14-game span. Now, right. In those 14 games, he had four games where he hit seven or more threes in them, which is extremely impressive. But, again, it's a 14-game span. The guy was hot for, you know, a month. And, you know, unfortunately got injured. And it doesn't look like there should be any lingering effects from his injury. I'm not suggesting that, but I'm just suggesting that, you know, he was playing a lot of non-conference games, maybe not that SEC competition, and was able to get some looks that maybe he's not going to be able to get. Certainly, maybe not in the SEC, certainly not in the NBA. But the 52% does stand out hugely. That's a big number. Cole Anthony is another player who missed 6 weeks in the middle of the season from December through February or to the beginning of February in his 1 year at UNC. So these are guys who have kind of a smaller sample size because of some injuries, the season being cut short. You know, it is kind of weird coming into this. We look back at what could these guys have done in the tournament to either cement some stuff or, you know, expose themselves a little bit, but also do it on a big stage so you can kind of see how they react when the lights are on them. And I don't think we necessarily get to have that this year with any of the players having March Madness having been canceled.
And you're someone who knows about exposing yourself on a big stage too. So
I'm not going to get into it again, but
you can read the place.
I have apologized to everybody that needed to be apologized to. Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Keep telling yourself that. But I talked about this a little bit on the podcast this week with RJ Hampton kind of moving up according to Sam Vecenie, and Patrick Williams is a guy you've talked about as well, and Isaac Okoro being mocked to the Pistons. It's got me, as I've been listening to your profiles and doing a little bit of the Athletic research as well, and James Edwards wrote about it today about a kind of a mock trade where it's 7 for the 3 Celtics picks. I don't know that they'd necessarily go for that. I think that you might have to, in addition to the picks, you might have to take a bad contract back for them, something like that, to make that work. But these prospects in the middle of, you know, the 14 is sitting right out there that the Celtics have as probably the best pick that you're going to get from them for 7 if you make a deal like this. Are you with me in that maybe you're feeling pretty good about a trade down at this point? I know that with the NBA, you basically don't trade down because you want to get as good a prospect as ever, but it feels like this is a year where you might want to do that and do more of the NFL model where you can take a couple of picks and a couple of bites at the apple after that.
Yeah, actually I do this year. I mean, just going through some of the prospects, and we're still on the low, you know, the backside of the guys right now. And, you know, what I see is that there is a deep pool of talent that we see there. So if you can get, you know, a 14 and they have a second one on the back end and have one of these guys maybe fall, hasn't been a player that I don't like or couldn't see contributing to the Pistons in some ways. Right now, though, I think what we're going to see in the difference of the profiles coming up here, starting with the next one with Kira Lewis, is that athleticism is going to take that next level. These guys have all had good skills. And again, I think you were right with the NFL model, picking up an extra pick here, there, something for the future, but you don't want to get, I had this conversation with somebody, you need a dynamic player to run your offense through. And that's what Blake serves as right now. Now that player needs to get better at some point, but that doesn't look like it's in the off season in the car, or that's not in the cards this off season. But as you start plugging in all these other holes, I think you run the risk of not being able to jump at a situation that may arise when a player that you can build your franchise around becomes available. If you feel it's, you know, Dumboya, then that's great. Right now, keep, you know, working towards that end. But also know that he's young enough that you need to keep your options open. And if you are going to trade down, I don't know if getting an extra pick in this draft or looking at future drafts would be the best move. But there is some talent deeper into the lottery and even outside the lottery in this draft, including point guard, which is a position I think that you really need to use this draft to address. And you still can get away in getting that done with trading down. So I would take any phone call that was coming in to the Weaver office that would potentially look at the Pistons number 7 as an asset and, you know, get what you can for it.
Yeah, and I think with especially a Boston that has multiple picks in the first round, it's a little bit of a numbers game for them because they don't have the roster spots, but mm-hmm. you as the Pistons might have an extra roster spot to pick up a guy, especially if you take an Enes Kanter back and have him as your backup center, then you don't have to worry about that on the free agent market, mm-hmm. or maybe you cut him right away and just take the salary loss if he's not in your plans, and that could work out for the team to clear up a roster spot as well. So the good news is when you're bad, you've got a lot of options on your roster because you just cut guys and get rid of other projects and pick up new projects and reset the clock on the rookie scale and all those good things. So, hey, good place to be at the bottom of the NBA so you can make all these moves and adjustments on the fly. But up next, we're going to do a little rapid-fire NBA, talk about some of the news of the day. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. But hey, all right, now Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. It was before, but now it's even better. The improved Built Bar, more delicious than the one before that. The 6 new flavors, they're caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Add those to the 12 OGs, flavors like mint brownie, raspberry. It's all good, and it's all different. If you get the variety pack, you can wake up to a new thing every day, maybe have something before you go to bed and have it be different. Get that variety as a spice of life. And they're healthy too. They're great for the health conscious guy. You can lose or maintain the weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. Great for any low carb diet. You can still get yourself in ketosis, stay in keto, even with a delicious chocolate treat, which is hard to believe going into it. But go to builtbar.com, use promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use promo code Locked On for 20% off at builtbar.com.
Yes, sir!
All right, back with Fridays with Brian. Kind of a whirlwind of a week. I thought we'd have not much NBA news this week after the championship was decided on Sunday night, but Doc Rivers, I guess that was a couple days before the championship. Then you had the coaches seem to be the carousel of what's going on. Ty Lue, Jeff Van Gundy, Stan Van Gundy, and then today on Thursday, Ty Lue gets the deal to move one seat over with the LA Clippers, and it sounds like Chauncey Billups is going to be on his bench, although I did see a report that Chauncey is still up for the head coaching position with the Indiana Pacers, so we'll see how that kind of goes by still, but the Pacers were looking at the Pelicans assistant as well. So some big names out there and some not so big names, but first of all, Chauncey, what do you think about his first stint as a coach being one seat over from the big one on a team that's obviously got championship aspirations?
Well, it may, you know, I'd look at that situation if I was Chauncey as probably the more desirable one at this point. I know you've always pointed to Indiana as, and it seems no matter what they do, they end up middle of the pack. They're not really a realistic contender, save for a couple of years there in the early 2000s, maybe. And they're always kind of in the middle of the pack. So it seems like kind of a no-win situation for Chauncey. You're going to kind of tread water there. Where with the Clippers, you're going to make a splash. One way or the other, you're going to be on the front page. And if you do have aspirations of, you know, head coaching, front office, whatever they may be, it seems to be kind of some mixed signals coming from Chauncey, or maybe not from Chauncey, but in regards to Chauncey with where he ultimately would like to end up as far as, you know, in the front office or on the bench. The Clippers are going to be must-see TV no matter what their rollout onto the court next year. So, you know, I think seeing him out in Los Angeles would be fun for us as ex-Pistons fans, hoping to see some success or a deep playoff run out of that team, as opposed to in the division, you have to worry about beating Chauncey.
And yeah, that would be tough.
Yeah, so I would like to see him get out there with the Clippers, get his feet wet a little bit with there. But a player of his, or you know, a coaching candidate with his resume might not necessarily need to do that. But it may be a profession where he might want to walk before he runs.
Yeah, and I think being a lead assistant could set him up maybe in a year or two to move over one seat somewhere. And I'm trying to think of a franchise that has an aging coach who might be able to develop this team a little bit and put them on the precipice of somewhere next. Nice. I can't really think of any off the top of my head that really fit that billing, but maybe something will come to me in the future there. Well, maybe somewhere where he's beloved or played before in the past.
Well, we see that with the Red Wings bringing Steve Yzerman back home. Would not hurt for the Pistons PR team to bring such a beloved and championship winning figure like Chauncey Billups back to Detroit if the time is right.
Yeah, and I think, seriously about it, though, Steve Yzerman running the Red Wings, it's just, you think he's doing a decent job. It's hard to say they're the worst team in the NHL last year, and maybe they've made some good moves this offseason. Time will tell, but a guy like that just gets slack, right? You get, first of all, there's a little bit of excitement around the team, but second of all, you get you get some foul tips on some bad moves that the fans will give you a nice little break for. So it could be a good situation for him to come back here someday.
Yeah, you've got money in the bank to play with already that a new coach maybe not wouldn't have if he didn't have the background with the team that Chauncey does. So yeah, he'll be starting off in the black coming into the situation here in Detroit if that ever unfolds like Steve Yzerman does. But you know how sports are. You make a couple bad moves, you end up like Alan Trammell.
Yeah, or Joe Dumars at the end of his career,
yeah,
right?
Because,
I mean, Joe Dumars is like two versions of Joe Dumars here in Detroit there, and now he doesn't come back for the homecomings, which shouldn't be how it is and shouldn't be how it ended, but that's where we're at right now. But what do you think about Stan in New Orleans as a strong possibility to join the Pelicans coaching staff or to be the head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans, a young up-and-coming team? What do you think about that fit for Stan Van Gundy if that happens?
What keeps coming back to me is to what end is Stan Van Gundy? I mean, obviously, if he has the desire to coach again, he's going to go to where the openings are. But is New Orleans really the best situation for him to walk into right now? You know, developing these, you know, younger players. We've got Lonzo and Ingram and Zion down there. So there's a good young nucleus. But they're in a Western Conference that they're going to have to jump 6, 7, 8, 9 teams to be in contention for a title out there. So I don't know. It's interesting. It's to me, it's exciting because it's the next Piston coach, but there's not really anything overly exciting about Stan Van Gundy. It's a retread. This is what now his fourth NBA would be his fourth NBA job. So we've seen him in the NBA for the better part of 2 decades and, you know, cultivating that youthful big talent is kind of where he made his calling card in his first stop with Orlando. So hopefully maybe they're trying to get some of that magic that he was able to, you know, pull out of Shaq, out of Zion. I don't know, but I don't know that it's going to be a good situation for anybody to walk into right now. They're going to be married to Zion Williamson. And I don't know if I've given this take on the air before. I don't believe the hype behind Zion as much as at least advertisers do. So I think you're kind of walking into a situation with one hand tied behind your back because, again, as he learned in Orlando with the whole Dwight Howard situation, that these players are going to have control. And if they don't like the situation, at least the franchise player, then you're going to be the first person they're looking at to ship out of town.
Yeah, I think the bubble certainly wasn't kind to Zion Williamson, but the bubble was kind to Stan Van Gundy when he's on the air speaking as competently and eloquently about the games as he is. I think that does wonders for guys in their public perception. We saw it with Steve Kerr in the past, and we've seen other guys kind of, you know, Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson are always talked about for coaching gigs as well. So, you know, I think Stan Van Gundy has done well for himself. Rick Carlisle famously took a year off and did Matt the TV Millen. Thing. Yeah, Matt Millen, of course, legends all over the place. So, yeah, being on TV certainly helps you get it done there in the future. But we'll see if Stan Van – like you said, it's a good call on the Western Conference. It's really making a gamble that Zion's going to stay healthy for a long time and ascend to the ceiling that he certainly has, but – don't know if he's ever going to reach that those heights that that could be out there for him. But that wraps up this edition of Locked On Pistons and the week of the show as well. I am your host, Matt Shook. He is Brian Shook, helping us out. Brother Brian, thanks again to him. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you guys on Monday.